Hello, everyone, and welcome to Blind Bargains Cast 35. I am Joe Steinkamp, and I'm with my good friend JJ Mutto, who is eagerly awaiting Monday Night Football. So we have to actually blow through this pretty fast, actually, to be able to jump right on in and talk about the news of the week. But hey, before we do that, let's mention Blind Alive, our kind sponsors.
Yes, don't just live, be alive. Thank you so much, Blind Alive, for sponsoring us. And of course, stay tuned. We'll tell you about some really cool offers and things that they have going on over at blindalive.com. And yes, I'll be quick. The Lions are going to lose soon.
How's the, you know, not to upset, you know, the fact of working out, but how's the tasty marshmallow going, sir?
So it's going. I installed Android Marshmallow on my Nexus 7. Now, it didn't come down as an over-the-air update yet, but they have it up on the Google site, so the geeks can get it today, and the rest of the people can get it pretty soon. So I haven't played with it a lot yet. The Google on tap thing is pretty cool. So basically, I went into Spotify, I was listening to some music, and if you hold down the home button, or in our case, you double tap and hold the home button, you bring up this on tap thing. And then it shows you little kind of related Google Now cards based on what you are currently doing. So there it showed me like the links to YouTube video and how to buy the song and things like that. But, you know, it does that for emails, too. It's like if restaurants or there's lots of different things. We're interesting to see how this one goes. And a little bit later on, I'm going to talk about, by the way, I have a Chromecast audio already.
Ooh, that is like the perfect stocking stuffer for those who have old timey stereos and need.
And it would fit in a stocking, even a small one.
Is it round like the Chromecast for video?
It's exactly round, and actually, it's just round and a cable. So actually, you could use the cable to hang the stocking with care.
Ooh, and, there you go.
It works with Android and iOS, and we're going to demo that a little bit later on.
That sounds awesome. Well, one of the things you can start preparing for is all the Thanksgiving cooking. Like, maybe you're going to put marshmallows in those yams. I'm not a fan, but I know some people are, and you can learn about how to cook yams from Directions for Me, which is, of course, from Horizons for the Blind, and also BC Scan. Doesn't that work with that, if I remember correctly?
It does. So Directions for Me is back. It was down for a little bit as they kind of rejiggered and updated the database and got it working with some new services. So they are back online at directionsforme.org. Now, anyone who uses BC Scan, which is our site that works with it, that is in the very coming soon pile. They just have to recreate a couple little hooks, the API, to be all techie to get it working between them and us. So they are back online. We'll be back online shortly. And it is, if you've never used Directions for Me, you can search for all sorts of things, you know, frozen pizzas or cans of pop and get ingredients and get directions and get things like that.
A lot of microwavable really things, rice or roni, Stouffer's pizzas.
The box
is
meals,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Really useful for that stuff.
And even actually having to use Digitize in the meantime, because here in the house, we use Directions for Me a lot. And so Byron got lots of DMs from Ricky and I. And so for the meantime, we were having to use Digitize as just kind of a backup, kind of a secondary kind of thing. So with her iPhone 6S, that actually turned out to be okay. But man, is it nice to have that service back up. It has made life a lot easier over here in this household.
Yeah, and you know, and the fact that you can search for specific things, you know, the frozen pizza thing is like, oh, I can just look that up on Google, which you can. But have you seen, there's so many different kinds of frozen pizzas. There's like Agreed. The Red Baron, thin crust, rising crust, stuffed crust. They all have slightly different
Breakfast
directions.
Pizza.
Oh, I love it.
And that is
love
a thing. It. That oh, there is Red Baron's breakfast pizzas. They're like scrambles or something like
delicious.
That. Delicious. You know, you could put your pizza under a scanner stand and be able to read it that way if it makes it a little easier. Maybe you got a little jiggly hands in the morning and you haven't had that first cup of coffee and you need something to be able to tell you if that's a singles Red Baron or a breakfast pizza Red Baron. So there's a crowdfunding plan for this new stand scanner thingy.
There is. So the guy that did the Fapito scanning stand, the Fapito, I think that's how we're saying this. His name is Tameg Gordega. And I'm sure I butchered your name. Sorry, buddy. He's been doing a Kickstarter to raise $4,000 to do a scanning base that would have some tactile markings to kind of go with the existing stand. I'm checking this right now. Ooh, he's at $3,809 with 69 hours to go. So which means right about the time this podcast comes out, And, you know, depending, there might be a few hours left. Or it looks like it's probably going to get funded, $191 left. And I would say there's a pretty good shot. That's your 95%. Yeah, that's a pretty good shot to get funded, which means the thing's going to be available later this fall for $35. You get the scanning base and the stand. Now, the thing to me is interesting. It's not the world's strongest stand, and I still would like to see some a nice, like, strong scanning stand, maybe made out of wood or metal or something. It says that's going to cost a lot more. So
they
tend to be
highly derogated, corrugated cardboard. Yeah.
But, you know, there's multiple markets here. And, you know, I don't think everyone wants to spend $100. Some people would rather spend $100 and get a really nice stand. Some people want to spend $35 and get this. So if you're in that group, this could be a very good option.
Same way as wireless keyboards. You could spend a bunch on a Logitech one, or you could spend a little lower for an Anker or something like that. There's a market for everything out there. It's nice to have choice, as might be a theme on this show, perhaps, because we'll get a little bit more into that, I think, when we get to Sound Off. Choices that we have available to us, or where we can learn about history and where we can find information. I remember recently seeing, I think, on somebody's Twitter feed, I can't remember off the top of my head, that Helen Keller's tree had been, that one that she had climbed up in as a child, had been cut down. Well, we're losing history all the time, as you've heard us talk about on the show more than once this year. And it seems that we're having a thing to get people around to help give money to conserve or preserve the information left to us by Helen Keller.
The Helen Keller Library. Now, this is cool. This is from AFB. They did a campaign, and actually now it's over, but they're still raising money. They had a matching grant. In other words, they tried to raise $25,000, and if they did, that $25,000 was going to get matched. That makes $50,000, because that's how math works. Meaning, to preserve a whole bunch of collect, they have tons of letters that were written to Helen Keller. They have different manuscripts. They have images, and they're going to make the whole thing accessible too. So even the pictures are going to have descriptions on them. It's going to all be online. They're still taking donations for this, even though this little particular campaign is over. They are still trying to raise more money. It was the National Endowment for the Humanities that did the match grant, but lots of cool stuff there. And yes, it is history. You know, you can have your opinion, yay or nay, and how much of an effect or how much of an influence Helen Keller was. But still, there's no, you really can't deny the fact that she did have a big place in the history of Linus. You know, well, we could debate what extent.
As the butt of many jokes, unfortunately. And that's how some people actually know. I mean, when you sit down and ask people to name off famous blind people, you have Ray Charles, you have Stevie Wonder, and more than likely you have her Helen Keller. A significant portion of older Americans, because that's a famous blind person they would know.
And probably many times the first one, right? Before Stevie and Ray.
Probably.
Probably her.
That's the miracle worker. And, you know, to a certain age group who went through drama school or high school or high school drama, you might have actually had to perform or read that. So you pretty much were familiar with that in a lot of places. So a big part of the culture and who we are and what we do and what we say. So it's important to kind of keep that kind of stuff, because, again, a lot of that stuff is starting to fade. There was an article that came out last week about digital history and what's lost, and donating to archives.org and making sure that, you know, people like them are doing things. Look at all the crowdfunding that went on for Neil Armstrong's spacesuit by NASA and the Smithsonian. To make sure that
did they get the spacesuit?
Yeah, that one did make. Yeah. So it's weird to think, but to those people who are very much heavily invested in something or believe in a passion for a particular thing, crowdfunding has turned out to be a really good thing to maintain some of that or be able to bring some of that to market, which is kind of interesting. It's a different way of looking at things in the preservation era. Another way of looking at things is, well, maybe on Hulu. What I mean by that is Netflix had a deal with several movie companies, including Epix, and those are no longer being renewed. Now, what that means is that some films that you might have had in your queue might have just disappeared. That's nothing new. That can happen from time to time. But the problem is that these were audio described movies, and they're going over to Hulu, and they won't be audio described. Ooh.
So, at least for now, right? There's no audio description on Hulu.
That's kind of the hope. that Hulu will come around to our line of thinking and bring across audio description. Hulu is a series of companies that own it. There's no definite company. So you have a little bit of Fox, a little bit of ABC, a little bit of CW and Comcast and all of these guys. So there's no clear, entity other than the Hulu Management Corp that kind of sort of oversees what happens with Hulu. Therefore, it's unclear as to how the rights get transferred over and if there's the ability to do what Netflix is doing, which is saying, look, if you're going to bring these films over here to Netflix, we'd like them to be audio described or at least given us the opportunity to get those put in. And certainly all the Netflix originals are showing up audio described.
Yep.
And that's kind of Netflix's mentality is like HBO. They're relying less and less off of Hollywood movies to hook subscribers. They have enough in their portfolio between House of Cards and Orange and the New Black and all these other things that they're starting up that they think they have enough to go on. And so it doesn't matter to them as much as it once would have to have a big portfolio of Paramount movies.
And it makes a lot of sense from Netflix's or HBO standpoint, because once you commission a series like House of Cards, including audio description, you own that. That's yours. You can keep that on. You don't have to keep paying for the rights to have your own series on your own service forever. You have that there, where all these movie deals, they have to keep paying every couple of years to keep them there. So that's why a lot of times they're doing this and why a lot of movies are suddenly kind of falling off Netflix. You have Netflix, you have Hulu, you have Amazon Prime, among others, but those three
are the majors. Kind of the big ones.
One of the three does audio description, and of course, with three services fighting, it raises the price because they're all kind of bid against each other. But right now, it affects us because one out of three has audio description, and that's certainly hopefully something that can change.
There's also an HBO blackout effect. If HBO gets a movie as part of the digital rights initiative that HBO has, if it's on another service, they have to remove it when it's on HBO's service. So you could have a movie disappear for 3 to 5 months and then reappear out of nowhere because it was being licensed by, to HBO for a while. Therefore, HBO Now or HBO Go also both don't have audio description. This becomes way more interesting the more that cable cutting is starting to grow in popularity as more people are starting to stream more online. And so there's a hope that they will start to move towards this. Certainly the technology is there and it's not a question of bandwidth. I mean, we're just talking about another audio track, which is minimal compared to all the other data bits that they're kicking out from the data centers. So it just seems kind of weird and strange that this isn't a thing, but at least we can point to Netflix and say, hey, look, they're doing it. Why aren't you doing it? Question mark.
And let's see, looking at this cord cutting, okay, 8 for Netflix, 12 for Hulu's premium, and 15 for HBO Go. Well, now you're back up to $35 already, so with no sports.
Oh, well, and you can get Sling TV and get all the other channels, so if you wanted Food Network and all those other ones, so you could easily get right back up to cable.
It's ultimately not going to be as cheap or cheaper.
But, for some people, they actually, like, let's take, for instance, some people might get, what is it, I think it's Stars that has Evil Dead, Ash versus the Evil Dead. So they might take it on for a couple of months and just get to watch that series. That's all they really want, or Homeland for Showtime, or Game of Thrones for HBO. There are people who just kind of pop in for event series and then drop out again. And that doesn't really bother these guys because they're actually still hoping that you'll stay around and see their other stuff and stay in for other months, or to pay off the cost of development for that. So that was good enough. We got the subscriber we thought we would get. So different way of looking at revenue, and it's very, very, very strange.
Things are going to change as we go into the future. The iPhone 7 is only 11 months away, as I
pointed out in this article, huh? Yeah, like that. Somebody actually did catch the joke on Twitter. They were like, really? Really? that was a joke.
So let me guess. It's going to have new features.
Oh, I would imagine.
It's going to have a better camera.
Possibly. I would think so. It might be heavier and chunkier because the iPhone 6S is a little heavier and chunkier. We have one in the house. And while I'm not sold on this whole Taptic Engine 3D touch thing, or as I like to lovingly call it, the new right click, the thing is a little heavier than I expected. For fun, actually, we took the iPhone 6S and put it in my Galaxy S case, in my Galaxy S5 case, and it kind of just a little bit, just a, not too big, but just a little bit of room on the sides of the iPhone 6S, which was cool. About the same, if you put them like tall, they're about that tall.
Joe has a few links that he compiled. And by a few,
a bunch of links, and talking about new Apple TV and how iFixit lost their app and standing with Apple because they put out the stuff about the Apple TV before the Apple TV was released, the fourth generation. Some stuff about iOS 9 and some interesting things about competition. There's a lot of, as much as you might like to think that one company copies the other, not to the extent that everybody's copying everybody now, and it's all fair game. And so there's a whole section in there about those kind of links.
I want to see you segue from that to this.
Yeah. So
the story of the week, if you've been on Twitter.
Whew, man, you are not lying. Controversy is what I'll choose as my poorly segue vehicle.
Yeah.
So I heard about this like late last week, and it was kind of bouncing around Facebook first, and then I saw it on Twitter, and there is a condition out there, and I can't remember the name of it. Maybe Jay will skim the article while we're talking. There's a condition out there that individuals have where they identify themselves as disabled, even though they are not. And
this body integrity identity disorder.
Wow, that is a... Yeah,
I guess.
So the gist of this is that this woman always wanted to be blind, so much so that she convinced someone to pour drain cleaner into her eyes in order to render her blind. There were a lot of individuals on social media who had some immediate reaction and a lot of confusion. But I put this in the lineup mostly because it was one of the most retweeted articles that I saw during the week and also on Facebook. But moreover, to draw attention to it, because it was just kind of interesting to me. I don't think I have any opinion one way or the other on it. I know a lot of other people did, and you might actually have some and send it in at feedback@blindbargains.com once when you read the article over at the show notes. I thought it'd be amiss if we didn't put this into the news lineup, and it didn't really fit in last word. So if you are interested about this, definitely head on over to blindbargains.com and check out this article about the woman who wanted to be blind.
You know... Yes, the immediate reaction is what an idiot, and or more so, how did she find someone that was willing to do this for her to make her blind? It was like her psychiatrist or somebody that ended up doing this for her. Now, that's the surface reaction. Obviously, she does have or must have some sort of mental disorder, you know, that caused her to want to be blind, and it's not because being blind is really such a terrible thing. That's not the message that I'm going after here. It's more that why would you want to make yourself into something you're not? You know, I wouldn't cut off my leg just because, yeah, sure, I could get around. I could find ways to do it, but I'm not going to do that.
Or want to identify yourself. You meet someone in your life and then you want to be like that individual. I mean, certainly there are people who dress up like Justin Bieber, male or female. There are people who dress up like famous people like, you know, Doctor Who or what have you. There are lots of people who want to do that. But I don't know that it gets to this kind of extreme. I mean, there's a woman who had herself surgically altered to look like Barbie, you know, that, but to her, that was the sign of beauty. She wanted to look as beautiful as the dolls that she played with. Who knows? It's a very weird and wonderful world that we live in. And this individual felt compelled enough to want to be blind, whereas some people, and again, our condition can fall to somebody who has lost their vision later in life, who would have a horrible reaction to learning about this story. To those of us who were born blind, it's just kind of perplexing and confusing. It is a very interesting story, and I thought it was a neat one to share. But it's not just blindness. There are other individuals, like you were saying, who feel that they would like to know or would feel more comfortable in their bodies if they were disabled, say, from the waist down. It's just a trip to think about. But definitely let us know what you think. feedback@blindbargains.com. And again, you can find this story as well as all our others, including the Apple story that we mentioned a moment ago, by heading on over to blindbargains.com, clicking on the audio tab, and going down to episode 35, The Price of a Chromecast.
Speaking of audio, I want to tell you a little bit about Blind Alive. Blind Alive is pleased to offer a variety of audio-described workouts designed to challenge exercisers of all levels. Now, you can visit their website to view their growing collection of described workouts, www.blindalive.com. While you're there, learn about the Back Tee Pack, a backpack designed with your health in mind. Subscribe to their newsletter, read the blog, listen to podcasts, and find complete descriptions for all of the exercises. Now, workouts can either be downloaded to your computer or purchased on CD. Now, they're pleased to announce a brand new workout. This simple but challenging Pilates workout is done while seated. It makes use of a Pilates ring for added resistance. For a limited time, order any of their workouts and you'll automatically receive a free bonus, a 10-minute evening stretch designed to help you unwind at the end of the day. For more information, you may visit www.blindalive.com. Again, that's www.blindalive.com, all one word, or email support@blindalive.com.
Well, coming up, we've got some audio reviewing with JJ. He's going to sit down and play with the Chromecast audio. I am very excited about this. I actually did not pull the trigger myself on this and waited for people like Patrick or Jay to fall on that sword first.
That's true. I had it bought by the time we recorded last week's show.
That's true. I had that page open, hovered right there, like a hovercraft, like a DeLorean hovercraft hitting 88 mile per hour, because I will be talking about Jetpack Joyride has a Back to the Future promotion going on. So you'll hear a little bit more about that. All in just one second. Oh, yeah. And last word and sound off. Don't forget all that and more on episode 35.
Hey, folks, it's new technology time. We just talked about Chromecast audio on episode 34 last week. You can go back for the Google Cast to hear all about that. So I bought one. And why not? It's a cool little audio device so I can cast from my phone, Android or iPhone, to this little thing. What is this little thing? Well, it's a circle. It's about 2 inches in diameter. Has the Google logo on the top. On one side, it has a micro USB port, which is used to plug it into a wall outlet. And on the other side, it has a headphone jack, which you can plug in, well, cords to a speaker. You can plug in headphones, or you could do an optical out audio cable. So this thing is tiny. What you do is you can cast audio from apps such as Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn Radio, NPR One, iHeartRadio, and others to this. Now, there's also a Chromecast Video, which does similar things to a TV. You can do Netflix and Hulu and things like that. One of the things I have found is you cannot cast video apps to the audio device. So they are kind of two separate things. You cannot cast Spotify to a video one either at the moment. But there's some cool features planned, one of which is the multi-room audio support, meaning that you can cast from your phone to multiple Chromecasts in different rooms and have a cheap multi-room stereo system, $35 times however many, a lot cheaper than other competitive options like Sonos and things like that. But instead of talking about the thing, let's just try it out. Okay, we have my Nexus 7 2013 running Android 6.0, just came out today with Spotify, so let's play some music here. Okay, Google. Play Que Sera Sera by Wax Taylor on Spotify.
Showing one suggestion.
All right.
Google, play the song. Spotify.
A record.
Showing items 1 to 13 by 16.
They're going to play this evening.
So, this is now playing on my tablet. So, let's get this over to the Chromecast now. This is more exciting.
Wax Taylor. Devices over your button. Home button. Q-Sera, Wax Taylor. Devices available.
I'm hitting this device is available.
Device is available.
Aha! We are now on the Chromecast. Now, the cool thing about that, I'll turn this down a little bit here. Cool thing about that, now we have TalkBack over here, and we have Chromecast over there, which I have piped into my mixer, but you could hook it up to a speaker. I hooked it up to my Bose SoundLink Mini 2 earlier, and that worked. And the music is all being taken care of over there now, so I can cue up songs, or I can do whatever I want. Now, here's where this gets even cooler. Let's go and grab my iPad. Which is somewhere around here.
I don't believe in
it. Can it be true? It must be true. No doubt.
There we go.
Life is going on as normally as ever.
Open Spotify.
Connect
context menu. But the next episode. Doctor. Context menu. Let me blow your mind. Evil Scorpion gift. Let me blow your mind.
Spotify. Say I want to play something from here. The brothers Johnson, Baz, Rick Bullet, Good Guy, Bonus, Trap Vision. Yeah. Get the fuck out my face. The brothers Johnson. Get the fuck out my face. The brothers Johnson, Bullet, 20th Century Masters, The Millennium Collection, Master Brothers Johnson. I just hit that from the iPad, also connected to the Chromecast. So you can have multiple devices connected at the same time here. Now we're going to hit pause. I just hit pause over here on my Android. Same song, same thing going on here. You can jump back and forth between different devices on the same network, or actually as long as it's nearby, on the Chromecast audio. So that's one of these things that makes it really cool. If you're having a party and you want people to do like a collaborative playlist or let people kind of just mess with the music, you can give people access to this and they can all connect to the Chromecast and they can all play music. Now, this is kind of being rolled in on various apps here and there, but you can play with TuneIn, Pandora, NPR One, and many, many others. It's really a kind of a cool little gadget. It's tiny. You can take it with you. It doesn't cost a lot of money, and it's just a cool little thing to play with. It's a Chromecast Audio, available for $35, and we'll link to it in the show notes at blindbargains.com.
You might have seen that there is Jaws 19 out in the theaters. No, really, there isn't Jaws 19. It's actually a part of the big Back to the Future celebration. 30 years ago, the film debuted, and there are all sorts of things going around, like new Pepsi bottles. All right, really, not new Pepsi bottles. The same old Pepsi bottles you saw in the movie, now available for purchase. They're in Lego Dimensions as far as Back to the Future is concerned. Hey, I've been seeing DeLoreans flying in the sky everywhere, or those just might be drones. Half Brick Studios, the makers of such great games as Fruit Ninja and Jetpack Joyride, are also celebrating the Back to the Future 30th by creating a level with Marty McFly in it, which is kind of neat. Now, Jetpack Joyride is a very low vision friendly game. It's what's called an endless runner, and by that I mean the background scrolls from the right to the left, and you have to jump over or through or past obstacles as they come towards you from the right to the left side of the screen. You just tap on the screen or hold your finger down to make your character go higher in the air with all sorts of crazy jetpacks that are available. In this case, you have hoverboards, the DeLorean, and other ways to actually collect things during the specially themed level. What's really good about this particular game is that most of the text is on black background. So it's white text or yellow text or very flashy text on a black background. The graphics are very easy to see. You can actually tell when something's about to hit you. The only part you might have a little trouble with is there are some lasers that shoot across the screen, and you have to watch the very edges of the left or right to be able to tell where those lasers are positioned. Otherwise, a lot of that is really easy to play, and it's not stuck on just one platform. You can play this on iOS, on Android, on Windows. Yep, it's in the Windows store. It's also available for Amazon tablets. So Jetpack Joyride is a great game to get out there, and you can actually do all sorts of crazy themed things with. I actually have one that lets you have bubbles come out of the back. At Christmas, they have a Santa Claus suit you can put on your character. You do have different missions that you can do. So there are little scientists on the ground that are trying to stop you. You can actually have a mission where you have to run on the ground and high-five them, or you have to dodge a certain number of missiles. It's a neat time waster. It's not something you're going to play for hours and hours. It's just something you might want to play while waiting for a movie or killing time or waiting for that endless, endless flux capacitor to recharge. That's Jetpack Joyride from Half Brick Studios, available on a number of platforms. Google Now is one of the most powerful parts of the operating system of Android, and one of the things that you can do now is you can actually use Google Now to call somebody in speakerphone mode, which is pretty, pretty neat. You can have your Google Now on and just say, hey, Google, or okay, Google, or whatever Google thing you have it set for, or you can actually go into Google Now, head over to the voice search box and click on that. Call Ricky Enger on speakerphone.
Showing
calling
one suggestion.
Ricky Enger. Work on Google. Speakerphone.
Make a call on speakerphone.
And it does just like that. So you can actually have it go right to my speakerphone and make a call, which is really nice. You can actually do that sort of if you're in the kitchen and you want to be able to do things without actually having to get the screen dirty, or you want to be able to do that kind of thing. Say hands-free driving is really what it's meant for, but I don't know that too many of us will be doing that until those self-driving cars show up. So you can play with that. Make sure that you say on speakerphone. It is very key. If you say in speakerphone or on speakerphone mode or something like that, it tends not to get it, or it gives you some kind of search results. So the person you're wanting to call on speakerphone. Just a tip for Android here on Blind Bargains Cast.
It's your turn to sound off. Email feedback at blindbargains.com or tweet us at blindbargains.
Going to feature some emails this time around in the old sound off area. This first one is from Deborah Armstrong, and she asks a direct question about having low vision students working with her, and that she is blind herself. And are there ways to kind of choose the right technology so that way low vision individuals aren't relying completely on audio only, or what low vision technologies are kind of working for individuals? What are some good ones? What are some bad ones? Video magnification and screen magnification. Man, it is so up to the individual. It's like speech synthesizers. You know, if we pulled a bunch of people, they probably would have a different feeling about what synth they like most. I scare people with the synth that I like. I like Neo Speech Julie, for instance. I think that's a well-known one from earlier podcasts, which says a lot about me, that I like things to be exuberant, buoyant, and happy, because she actually tells you things like, you know, you owe money. It's very positive.
And there's eSpeak fans out there.
Goodness, yes.
Ooh. I know. But for low vision, I mean, a lot of it, of course, has to do with, and I'm sure you know this, Deborah, the low vision people that are trying to do too much with their eyes. You know, it really depends. If you have a type of vision that means you can't read print at the same pace as a sighted person, then that's the time you should be looking at speech. And you probably already knew that, but that is certainly a point that I don't think ever gets said enough.
Yeah, and I did this for a living for a while. When I was at the Division for Blind Services in Austin's office, I actually individually worked with people who came to our assistive technology unit and did what's called a technical evaluation. So we had, at one point, 50 video magnifiers in their various types, from the handhelds all the way up to the, oh my God, my table space is gone, desktop versions. And we would have individuals play with those and find out what they wanted. To give you an idea, at the time, there was a Merlin LCD from Enhanced Vision. This gentleman that I worked with, unfortunately, had chemical burns in his eyes from working in the chemical plants in South Texas. He could only read text if it was purple on black. If I tilted the display at a 15-degree angle and he stood up and could look down through his eyes, because otherwise everything else he saw was kaleidoscope because of the scarring that he had. So that's an extreme case. There was a woman that I worked with who chose Zoom Text because she could change the foreground and the background color so she could have a teal background with kind of a purplish lettering. I got a headache after working with her for just a couple of hours to teach her Microsoft Office, but she read that fine. And I put it back to like Invert or something that I could read. Oh my gosh, she couldn't read that at all. Learning about those things, about those individuals, and each one of those are going to be individual likes or dislikes. You can make some generic kind of ways, and certain magnifiers do, you know, blue on yellow, yellow on certain types of white. Yeah, I know that sounds strange, but black and yellow and blue and white are generally colors you almost find on almost all video magnification products. Because they generally tend to be soothing or comforting to those who have various types of low vision. And field vision, that's the harder part. When you do job accommodation, a lot of people think, oh man, if you're low vision, let me get this 45-foot wide monitor in here. And if that person has really no peripheral vision, you're actually doing them a disservice. They'd rather have a smaller monitor because of the central vision that they have. They might not be able to, you know, look all over. It's like mowing a very large track of land with a push mower. It's just too much. So knowing your students is going to do just as much as finding out about this technology, because the technology will change, but the people generally tend to find what they like and stick with it. And you might have to experiment with some individuals. Hey, do you like it when the light's on? How about we turn the lights off? Does that make it too glary? Okay. Just the simple low-tech solutions can mean a lot. Maybe putting a monitor against a dark wall or putting a curtain or towel behind the monitor. One of my very favorite stories I used to tell to counselors, you'll get a kick out of this, Jay. The girl complained that she had lots of trouble seeing her monitor. She had it in a bay window on a glass table. So I walked in and closed the drapes. I said, can you see the monitor now? You know, it was like what I did. So people just tend not to think about that. They want to do things with a technology base. So I hope that helps. There is a lot more information that you could do. You could do kind of a an individual information where you, you know, review, where you sit down and talk to people, you know, how do you see this? Do you see this in the morning? Do you drink coffee? I mean, it can get very in-depth, but that's kind of not where you're going. So, and the technology is going to work for each individual differently, but getting to know the vendors in your area or having those individuals go out and learn about the technology themselves so they can come back and tell you what works also helps, because that way you're getting a firsthand report on what works for that individual.
Yeah, definitely. That's some definitely some good points there. When the technology works, we love it. When it doesn't, we complain about it. And many of us did talk about the BART outage a few weeks back, which, well, it was pretty bad. And hopefully some people might, you know, some IT people, well, I'd be watching out for your jobs, because, you know, the entire building, not just BARD, went down for a week and a half. That's in any technology. That's pretty unacceptable. Kevin Barry brought up a point that I didn't think of. Books is one thing. The weekly magazines, he reads The Economist. So, you know, they missed an edition because of the outage. Then they finally fixed it, you know, but by the time they fixed it, the news and the magazine's, you know, 2 or 3 weeks old. So it's a little side quirk of that. If you come to rely on a service like BARD for your magazines, you know, how much it can affect someone. Of course, you could try to other things. I don't know if it's on NFB Newsline or on other services, but one of these things, if it goes down for an extended period of time, if you rely on that, especially if, say, for your job, that can be a big deal.
Audible has magazines, and I forget about this from time to time. Certain magazines actually appear with an Audible subscription. Now, again, that involves paying money and the like, but still, those are out there. And The Economist has its own podcast where they sometimes go over the articles that they're featuring. So there are sometimes alternatives. I know that's not the way you want to consume it, but there are some ways to actually get some of that or kind of go back over it after the time is already passed. It's neat to know that we have, again, all those choices. It was like you were telling me about Spotify or TuneIn having podcasts. I never would have thought about that. That's an interesting way. Or audiobooks.
Yeah. Okay. And of course, you have the premium audiobooks. And then the TuneIn. TuneIn's gotten big for that stuff. You know, of course, their podcasts are, you know, the Amazon Echo uses their library or their podcast database. Yes, The Economist is on NFB Newsline, by the way, as well. So.
BARD also had an update for Android. I'd love to tell you what it said, but under the release notes, it said two famous words. Can you guess what they are, Jay?
Bug fixes?
Yes! So anyway, that updated. Just curious, though, it says on the app that it's at the 1,000 download button badge bar on Google Play, and nearby Explorer Online was at 100 on the number of downloads on the badge button bar. So I started playing with that a little bit over the week, and the online version. And I'm one of the few people who do not have the $99 version. So I'm playing around with it to see if this is going to be that thing that makes me pull the trigger on it for $99. And I'm curious to see if anybody's having the KNFB update was supposed to have all that stuff for subscription. Although I've been seeing a lot of people saying that they're having problems with their recently new iPhones with KNFB. So that is something we'll have to look into as well. But if you felt like you were moving from a trial situation, or is there an app that would make you pay more than the 99-cent download? Is there an app out there that, you know, iBrailler Notes is a perfect example. Did you buy it at the full price, or did you go ahead and wait for it to play around and then you snapped it up?
Even Blind Square, they've had some sales. Well, KNFB was at 50. Blind Square has been half off before. Voice Dream has been half off before. So, you know, it's kind of it's like movies. Do you want the app when it's brand new? Maybe if you wait 6 months, you can get a deal.
This is true.
Just make that own decision for yourself. And
there are all sorts of deals out there all the time. You know, you can find them in our own app, Blind Bargains, available on iOS or Android. You can actually listen to this very podcast and review the show notes. You can actually hit pause, read an article, come back to it. see where we were talking about, or you want to get a little deeper understanding before we launch into some weird commentary about whatever it is we have there, it's a great way to be able to keep up with things yourself. Or you can listen on the Amazon Echo, just like what Jay was saying just a moment ago. All of those are available to you, just like the last word. So I was being very careful not to involve food this week. And
we're good. Mine doesn't involve food either, so we're good.
One of the articles that I grabbed that a lot of people liked was talking about the psychology of people's voices and why do some people in a lower register sound more trustworthy than those who have much of a higher register than others, and why accents affect us, and why vocal fry is such a thing, and why is it so popular. I blame Kim Kardashian, but, you know, what can I say? So this article talks about the psychology of people's voices, and I knew this would get a lot of retweets the minute I put it out there. Very interesting article on why we feel the way we do about some people's voices and why they trigger reactions in individuals. I happen to like, okay, I've mentioned Tom Merritt. I like Tom Merritt's reading voice for news when he's done audiobooks. Not my thing. And this week I tweeted out about how I passionately disliked the Bard narrator for The Martian and wish I had read that on Audible. This was one of those times where I almost stopped Bard book immediately and turned around and bought The Martian on Audible because It ruined the story for me. The narrator was so poor and the wrong person for that book. The same way I felt about a lot of Star Trek books with Glenn Tipton, where he would read Captain Picard okay, but everybody else sounded like, you know, Captain Picard. So Worf had a British accent. Didn't work for me. So it was hard for me to get through some Star Trek books during my times with cassettes because it was just not the right narrator. Stephen King has read his own books. I wish he had not. Some people were okay with it. But, you know, some people have visceral reactions to voices.
There's a clip that went around several months back, and bless the guy's heart, but it was like this 90-year-old guy reading a science book on Learning Ally. And he sounds like, I don't know, if I had to take the class from this guy, I don't know what I would
say. Section 4.7, exercises. Preliminary questions. 1, how many iterations of Newton's method are required to compute a root if f of x is a linear function? 2, what happens in Newton's method if your initial guess happens to be a zero of f?
I've had professors like that, though. I had a professor in economics that had a on the back of his when he would talk. And I tell you, for real, somebody actually waited till there was a and went woo woo in the back of the class. And oh yeah, those are just moments, you know. But after that, I kept waiting for it to happen again, and I stayed awake for the rest of the class. But I've had professors like that where I just was like, oh man, can you just, and professors that would read from the book. So I'd already read like the chapter in psychology, and you went into class, and that's what he did. He would pull out and read the chapter in case you didn't read it. And I was like Snoreland. I was gone. I was out. Just no.
Well, so, yeah. If you can survive that one, you can survive any. And what you might not be able to survive is Comcast retention.
Oh, there's an app out there now, for $5. They'll remove you in 5 minutes. So I've been reading.
Yes. He already knows my story. Well played. Yes. It's a new San Francisco startup that will, like you said, you give them $5. They will deal with Comcast retention. That might be worth $3-$5. Now, you do have to give over your name, address, phone number, and your Comcast account number. So add some trust there. The service is called AirPaper, and this is kind of their launch gimmick. They're going to do other things too, like helping you get a passport or, you know, things like, or a visa, or helping you they want to be your service for doing random tedious tasks. They would
stand in line for you.
like iPad robot?
Yeah. Yeah, the robot that I've talked about before, where they had a telepresence robot actually go in New Zealand and buy the iPad or the iPhone 6S, like Sheldon from Big Bang Theory. You know, we've been playing around with a lot of different delivery services here. So we played with Postmates and Bring Me That and the traditional ones that you've seen before. And so a really big city or a city that has a lot of metro has that ability to have a lot of these services. Like an Uber driver I was riding with the other day had Uber, Lyft, and Postmates open, just in case she got a request from one of the three.
Oh man, he's gonna make sure you close the other two when you
and she would take herself off the other two and go do it. And there was that one, what was it, the Amazon just had that one that they announced that if you, you know, wanted to deliver packages to people, Amazon would let you. And Amazon actually also announced that you can actually pick up, they've reached like 100 cities are going to have different drop-off points at stores. So you actually could have Amazon delivered to the store and you could go pick it up there in case you're never home or you have one of those classics, I rang the doorbell. Sure you did.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, they've had the lockers, but this sounds like maybe an expansion of that program. Yeah,
it's like a drop-off kind of thing.
All this stuff.
Customer service.
The cool thing about it is now some of it is people are figuring out how to expand it out to the mid-sized cities, which a lot of us, you know, well, you and I both live in a mid-sized city.
Right.
And all this stuff coming to San Francisco, New York, Chicago is cool. But when it starts trickling down into, you know, the top 100 cities, you hit a lot of people. And once they figure out how to do this and make it economies of scale, there are some really interesting possibilities for all this stuff.
Well, you could sit on hold and listen to a bunch of music while waiting for that delivery package to show up. And such would be the case of hearing, well, I hear Take Five a lot of Dave Brubeck when I'm on various places and stuck on hold. But, you know, I've even heard some cheesy 80s synthesizer music, not like You Got the Touch from the Transformers movie, but others. This last article here is about the rise of the synthesizer, and I put it here because, well, it mentioned Keith Emerson and Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, so I was already set. And then there's actually a link to some Wendy Carlos stuff, which one of my very favorite soundtracks ever, Tron. But it talks about how, you know, mini Moogs from building synthesizers and mini sequencers. A really neat article about music. And I knew Patrick would love this. So occasionally I know I can intrigue Patrick to actually read the articles that we put in the show notes. And I think I got one. I think this might actually have Patrick read an article from the show notes because it mentions a lot of keyboardy type stuff that he would be interested in. Who's your favorite 80s synth poppy or heavily use of synthesizer type band? Jay, you play a lot of music at the booth.
I'm into the voice box and the talk box.
Oh, so yeah, talk box people. So, okay. Like the Peter Frampton. So
Zap and Roger.
Oh, yes.
Computer Love and
More Bounce to the Us kind of thing.
More Bounce. All that stuff is really cool.
Somebody and did a talk box version of Daft Punk's Harder, Faster, Stronger the other day. I saw going.
Which is really funny because that's actually originally based on a Warp Factory vocoder. I have one right here in the rack.
Oh,
if I were so inclined, I could be my very own Daft Punk. I don't, but I could.
You probably make a lot more money than you're making now.
This is true. This is very true.
Now, could you do the a cappella versions as well? Because you've heard the a cappella Daft Punk mix.
No. If I don't have things like auto-tune or vocoders or things to fall back on.
That I've said that, so okay. There's an actual a cappella version of a lot of Daft Punk's hits.
Might as well be.
Who are winning like all sorts of crazy awards now and are being used in all these weird movie soundtrack. It's when your heroes get used in mainstream stuff, it always throws you for a loop.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
It's really kind of funny, right? Because I had no idea, you know, when I heard those songs when they first came out, when Daft Punk first got, I mean, they were around for a while, but when they first got sort of popular, you know, around 2000, 2001 with that stuff. And I heard that, I'm like, it sounds like a vocoder, but it's not. And then I got this thing a few years later having no idea. And I'm like, wait, that's the sound. It has a very discreet, very specific sound that no other piece of gear has, and I'm like, oh, that's the Daft Punk sound. Cool. Okay,
now I see what they did. I'll buy that. All right, I want to be Daft Punk.
I want that Jeff Lynne voice from Mr. Blue Sky. You have that. Oh, that going. Yeah, that really exactly. Great. You know,
I think the one you're talking about, Joe, is he calls himself Mr. Talkbox. It's Byron Chambers, and he has a bunch of YouTube vids out, and there's a YouTube channel with his stuff.
Doing Daft Punk.
What I want is before there were talk boxes, there were Sonoboxes. And they were big in radio. They were, you know, the thing to have, you know, for your Pam's jingles and your...
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And literally all that is, as far as I understand it, and I've had somebody describe it, and I actually want to build one, because it doesn't look like it would be all that hard. It's just two boxes that you put on either side of your throat, you know, your trach. And then you just open your mouth, you send signal through it, and your face literally just filters this. It's like a reverse talk box. Like with a talk box, you put a tube in your mouth and you shape the sound of the sound with your mouth around the tube. The tube has a speaker on the other side, and in this case, you're actually putting sound through the other side of your face. Rather than
and
inside.
If you're Peter Frampton, you ended up losing a lot of fillings over the years.
Exactly. I mean, if you have 100 watts going into your face like that, something's going to happen. I mean, I've actually, I have one of those. I have a Heil TalkBox TB1, the original type of style that he used. And those things will take 100 watts. I don't know that I want to put 100 watts in my face, but you can do it.
It was the 70s. He didn't feel much.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, that was a thing. But this is a neat article and talks a lot about the history of synthesizers. And Moog just had an anniversary not too long ago
Moog.
That we've talked about before.
It's Moog, Joe. It's Moog. Somebody will get
it's
you
a Moog
for that.
Ring. See, it's a Moog ring.
I trust Patrick on pronunciations.
I trust Patrick.
I've actually been to the Moog factory.
Stuff.
I happen to know it's Moog.
I would agree that you would know.
I've got a picture on my phone of us and a few other people standing at the Robert Moog Muriel, the Bob Moog Muriel, outside the factory showroom. So that's something to have.
Where is it?
It's in Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh, it's okay.
That's where he spent a lot of his life there. That's where he died. And so they had...
Oh, yeah. I see you can visit him to arrange a tour. Okay.
Yeah, well, sure. No, never mind,
he's
been dead
since
2005.
Well, you probably won't see Mr. Moog.
No, not Mr. Moog. Not gonna happen, unfortunately. No. You know, and when they had a public memorial for him when he died, and I wanted to go, and I couldn't. I was going to get somebody to drive me out there, and it's like a 4.5 hour drive, and that didn't happen. I even looked at flights, $1,200, and so I didn't do it.
Did they have any Moog music at the?
Yes,
that's what I was thinking. Who did the funeral dirge, and did they carry him in a gigantic synthesizer case all the way down there? And
well, you know, those modular synths were pretty big. I mean, you fit in one of those things.
I remember seeing Yamaha DX7s on tour.
DX7s are tiny and cute and pocket-sized compared to some of those things.
Yeah, but some people traveled with a lot of them. I can think of Oingo Boingo and several others who would carry
No, it wasn't uncommon to have like 4 or 8 of those things in a stack just so you can get all the notes at once because they only had 16-note polyphony.
And Depeche Mode used to travel with a lot during the Violator tour. Good Lord.
Yeah.
Are we still on the air?
Sorry about that. Hey, everybody.
Hey, I completely derailed your show.
Welcome to Synthesizer Chat, new version of Blind Bargains Cast. Hey, if you got any questions about these kinds of things, you can find us all on Twitter. You can also find us, of course, over at Blind Bargains Feedback at blindbargains.com. If you want to learn more about these stories, see what didn't make the cut for the weekly show, follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/RangerStation. That's twitter.com/RangerStation, all one word.
And of course, you can check out at AT Guys for the latest and assistive technology and some brand new stuff coming out. I should be able to announce it by next week's show.
Cool.
Or you might see it if I get it quick enough. I will bring some of it with me to Atlanta this weekend, Friday and Saturday, at the NFB of Georgia's convention in Atlanta or in New York City on October 17th at Patrick's House. I mean, no, at the Andrew Haskell Talking Library.
It's right down the street from here. Well, not quite, but.
Oh.
Well, come and say hi. Get a jump.
Yeah.
And that voice is Patrick Perdue, our producer of audio things extraordinaire that make us sound a lot better than we actually are. Thank you, Mr. Patrick. You can also, if you have any Halloween-y type sites or if you have things that you like to do for Halloween, let us know. We're actually thinking about a show that kind of surrounds the idea of Halloween. So sounds or sites or apps or things that you like. Let us know. Just send it on through feedback@blindbargains.com or get a hold of us one of the myriad of ways. Next week, we'll talk about the post-Microsoft launch event type thingy because we're recording this the day before that. And probably we'll have some more ideas about what's going on with iOS 9. Can we get an iOS 9.3? 0.03? Can we get a 3, maybe?
Can we just go to 1?
Yeah, man, we're getting all the way to
9.1 since before 9.0 was released.
Public beta people, I swear. And then we have Apple TV still to come out before the end of the year, and more stocking stuffers like you were already hearing. So getting all the way ready for you to be prepared for the holidays. By the way, we also crossed one heck of a milestone. We got nearly close to 50,000 listeners, unique downloads in 90 days, which is a wonderful thing to have. We thank all of you for telling your friends and family and others about Blind Bargains.
Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2015.